Welcome to the Sidearm Delivery Podcast, part of the D1 Baseball Podcast family. I'm your host, Shotgun Spratling, returning for Episode 7, an episode where things have gone a bit haywire. Normally on the show, we dive into a specific region or conference in each episode, and we have an interview with a player or coach, bring on our D1 Baseball analyst to provide you with another perspective. But this week, things got switched up. We were already planning to do things a little different since my fellow D1 Baseball West Coast analyst Eric Sorensen was traveling and unavailable the day we were recording, so we opened up the podcast to your West Coast college baseball questions. Initially, that was going to be the second half of the episode, as we had Gonzaga head coach Mark Maktoff on to talk about the Bulldogs' big series win on the road at number 11 TCU last weekend. We had a fun discussion with Maktoff about this year's Zags, how the West Coast Conference is shaping up, and life in Spokane. Unfortunately, there were some technical difficulties on our end, and the audio of our interview has been lost to the ether. We basically came into the game out of the bullpen, left a fastball up, and gave up a game-tying home run. That's our bad. We're going to try to get Coach Maktoff on again for a future episode, as the Bulldogs should be one of the top contenders in the WCC this season, but we didn't want to abandon the episode and leave you without answers to the questions that so many of you submitted, so we're going to jump right into those. We got some from the WCC, so we'll start there in what could be one of the more intriguing conference races this season. I mean, you got San Diego, who's 10-2 already against Big West teams, and they're scoring almost 10 runs per game, one of the top offenses in the nation. You got St. Mary's, who's shown some fantastic starting pitching, led by Sam Bowers, 0.40 whip. I mean, LMU is .500 right now against an all Pac-12 schedule so far, including a series win at Washington. Pacific took 3 of 4 from Cal the opening weekend. Now, they're only 6-7, but all 7 of their losses have been by 3 runs or less, including 5 one-run losses. San Francisco, similar situation. You know, they won a series at UCLA to open the season, you know, against the number 2 team in our preseason rankings. They're just 2-10 since then, with 6 losses by 1 or 2 runs, so a couple teams that are losing some close games, but you know, right there, if they can find the thing to get them over the edge, they could win some more games. BYU started slow, but they got 6 losses by 3 runs or fewer. Santa Clara, an offensive club that's been working its starting pitchers up slowly, so we'll see once they get in conference play if those guys are ready to give them a couple more innings. Portland's offense has struggled a little bit more than I expected, but its pitching has kept it in games, and there's a pitching staff that is going to give them a chance every time out on the weekends in the WCC, I think. And then Pepperdine is the team that I picked to win the conference, and they're a team that's, you know, they struggled. But they've got some key pieces that have been unavailable at times. It got off to that slow start. They're hoping to turn things around once conference play starts now, starting to get a couple pieces back, and we'll see if a couple of those key pieces are back this weekend as they get going as well. So the WCC should be a really fantastic race. It always is. But normally it's, you know, 6 or 7 teams are fighting to get those 4 spots in the conference tournament. This year is going to be a little bit different. Are there going to be 1 or 2 teams at the top racing for that automatic bid? Are there going to be a couple teams? 3, 4? What's it going to be like? Oftentimes, you know, 1 through 6, 1 through 7 are interchangeable for a good portion of the season. And who can win the series, who can win those rubber matches, ends up determining who's in the conference tournament this year. Without the conference tournament, we'll see how things kind of shake out a little bit differently. Score Zag Score Podcast asked, where does Gonzaga finish in the WCC? Like I said, it's going to be hard to predict this conference just because it's the conference of cannibals, as I often call it. They often beat up on each other, but I think Gonzaga has a great opportunity to compete for that title. You know, I think San Diego is the team to beat right now if they get enough pitching. Their offense has been really dynamic so far. They've got to play a couple more, a tougher opponents coming up, and we'll see where they are when they face off against St. Mary's this week. Going to be a great contrast of pitching versus hitting. You know, who comes out in that series will tell me a lot about both of those teams and how those games are kind of played. Are they low scoring affairs? Do we see some runs get put on the board? I think they'll tell me a lot more about those two clubs. And I think Pepperdine still has a chance to jump back in this. And I think the way that LMU is really challenging themselves early this season, I think they've got a great opportunity to get into WCC play and make some noise. But I think Gonzaga is going to be right up there, you know, with that group, if not leading that group as well. At Beer Hebrew asks, what do you think of the St. Mary's pitching staff? Do you think they have enough to win the conference? They have a dynamic pitching staff. You're looking at the front of that rotation. You got Carlos Lomeli, who's a guy that I've liked since his high school days at St. John Bosco. You've got behind him, you got the Kai Bush, the big lefty. You got Sam Bauer, who doesn't walk anyone. He's got 19 strikeouts to one walk. And then you got Ryan Torrick, who's a guy that can float and do some different roles for you. If you have a four-game series, you can put him in there. I saw him earlier this year against Cal Baptist, was really impressed with his moxie. Doesn't have overpowering stuff anywhere close to that, but he knows how to mix his pitches. He knows how to keep hitters off balance, and that's the key in all pitching is being able to keep hitters off balance. So we'll see what kind of spot they use him in. I'm also curious about when they get Dalton Ponce back. Came out of the first inning of the game. I saw them against Cal Baptist, and Greg Moore told me afterwards they were shut him down for a little bit, just give him a little bit of time to rest and reset himself. So when they get him back going full steam, where does he fit in? Where do they try to use him? You know, they've got some interesting pieces at the back end they can use, and Christopher Campos, the shortstop, is a quality guy as well out of the pen. However, they're a little light on the offense, so they've got to get some great pitching to kind of carry them a little bit. You know, they've got some veteran guys in the lineup. You know, I really like the piece that they added with Justin Banks, the transfer coming over. You know, he's added some thump in the middle of the lineup, and Ryan Novis is going to give you some experience at bats every time. But they're a little bit light as far as the offense, so they need the pitching to be on that next level to be able to compete at the top of the WCC. Sean Urban asks, with the mostly regional schedules, what are the chances the Big West or the WCC are potential two-bid leagues? The WCC looks particularly strong this year. That's going to be the real tough question, and we talked about this a little bit on the last week's podcast with Kendall Rogers. You know, we were talking about the Big 12 and the Big 10, actually. The Big 10 not playing any non-conference games. How is the NCAA selection committee going to factor that in? You know, when they're looking at RPIs and it's all the same teams playing each other, the RPIs are going to be massively affected by that. And one of the things that Kendall said was that it's going to come down to the regional advisory board a lot more, he thinks, this season. So that's going to be something. It's going to be how you play and how you look to other people, other coaches going up against them. It's not just going to be about the wins and losses. You know, it's going to be about playing well and looking like a legit team, and that's going to be the question. I think the fact that, you know, Gonzaga going out of the region and playing those Texas teams and coming away with some positive results, I think everyone in the West was probably pretty happy to see that. That'll help boost the RPI a little bit there, but the fact that there's just so few out-of-conference or out-of-region games is going to make it that much more difficult for the RPI to be a standalone factor that we can look at and say, okay, that team's good, that team's not good, just because of where their RPI is. I mean, you look at someone like LMU, they're playing a ton of Pac-12 teams. So do you look at it and say, you know, if they go 500 in their Pac-12 games, which they are right now, and then they go, you know, 60 or 70% win percentage in conference, is that good enough to get them in? You know, it probably should be. You know, they're playing up a level of competition. They're playing well against some of these Pac-12 teams. They've got a series win at Washington already. You know, they should have gotten a split at Cal. That one hurt them a little bit, but they swept Utah at home. So they're a team that's playing pretty well against some competition that's supposed to be another level above them. The fact that they, you know, you can play at least at 50 at 500 clip and play a little bit above, if they can get some wins, some big wins, maybe a midweek win against UCLA would help boost that resume a little bit, then that's the type of thing that you're going to be looking at the regional advisory board and saying, yeah, they're overall record may not look as good as it could, but look at who they played, and we think that they're a team that can, you know, can hold their own weight in a conference like the Pac-12, then that's a team that probably should be in the interregional as well. So that's going to how it's going to be playing out. It's hard to see too many bids going out like that, just the way that it always is on the West, and that there's just so few extra bids that get tossed to this side of the country, unfortunately. But you know, I think the WCC actually might have a better chance at two bids this season than the Big West. We'll see what Long Beach State does, see what Hawaii does. You know, those are the two teams that are right behind UC Santa Barbara for me. We'll see if anyone else kind of jumps up in that mix. UC Irvine's a team that has some pitching. They've got to play a little bit better than they have the last couple weeks, though. So still to be determined. You know, getting into conference play now is going to be interesting. You know, Long Beach State is one I'm really keeping my eye on in the Big West, just because they have not played at all. Everyone else is going to be, you know, that many remaining weeks in front of them, can they play quality baseball when that's been one of the biggest issues so far through the first month is just a lot of sloppy play. Guys are just a step slow. You know, that's going to be something to take to keep an eye on with a team like Long Beach State. Can they get caught up to everyone else pretty quickly, or do they drop a game or two because they make an error when another team is playing a little bit better because they basically got that training camp time of an extra month starting in March. So it'll be interesting to see, but you know, it's going to be come down to those conference races at the end. You're going to be fighting for, you want to be that automatic bid. You don't want to be sweating on Selection Monday. Since we're talking Long Beach State, got a question from Greg Noble 2 here who asks, best atmosphere to see a game on the West Coast has to be Blair Field, he says. What others do you like? Now, Blair Field has a great atmosphere in the postseason. I love it. It's kind of a minor league atmosphere. That's the first time I came out to Blair Field. I actually wrote a story for grad school about how it had that minor league feel and the number of players that they had produced in the minors at that time. You know, definitely had that feel with the concessions, the games in between innings and stuff. But I think the best atmosphere, now if we're saying atmosphere, not just crowd noise, not crowd atmosphere, but the best backdrop is definitely in Malibu at Eddie D. Field Stadium, you know, watching Pepperdine with the ocean in the background. That's the best atmosphere. Come on now. You can't get anything better than that. Now the best fan atmosphere, I haven't had a chance to get up to Corvallis, but that's one that I definitely want to get up there. I would love to go see the rivalry series between the Ducks and the Beavers and see them do a split series or something. I would love to catch both of those teams playing at home, because when they have crowds there, both of those schools can really produce a lot of fans and really good support behind them. So those are two that I would still like to get to. I do enjoy going to Pepperdine probably more than any other place just because of the backdrop there. Since we're talking about the Ducks and Beavers, I want to steal a question from the D1 Baseball Weekly Chat talking about the top 25. Ducks 45 asked Kendall and Aaron, do you think that Oregon has surpassed Oregon State? And if you're looking at this year, then yeah, they beat them on the field. So you can say they surpassed them. But as a program, no, they've still got some work to do. But I really like the direction that Oregon program is going. Mark Wasikowski has got that group, really, buying into itself. I like the things they were starting to do last season. The couple of times I saw them early in the season, now they're getting some more dynamic arms, and they're getting some big bopper bats in the middle of the lineup that's kind of changing things. And they've got a couple guys that, are really taking that next step. It's great to see Kenyon Jovan back after the injury, sidelined him previously. He has been phenomenal for them. I believe he was our player of the week last week. He's just smashing balls all over the yard. Tanner Smith was terrific to watch the game I saw them at UC Santa Barbara. So watch out for Oregon this year in the Pac-12 race. They're off to a good start as far as the season, and got off to a great start last weekend, getting the first two games, two shutouts against Oregon State as well. So that shows you the pitching depth as well. Robert Allstrom at the front has been really good against quality opponents. They've got a big test coming up next weekend. They'll go on the road to Arizona, which should be a really big matchup. Arizona's got a big one this weekend going to UCLA. So some good Pac-12 matchups early in the season should be fun to watch. Our next question comes from the Sac State Baseball official account. Love it. Hornets, what do you think of the Hornets start? So Sacramento State is off to a 10-5 start so far. They had a big series, almost win at the beginning of the season. They took the first game at Arizona State, nearly got that series. That would have been a big one for them and big feather in the cap. Off to a 10-5 start, though, so no complaints there as far as their resume so far. They've been throwing themselves out there and, being willing to play whoever because, the schedule has changed a couple times on them. They've got terrific starting pitching once again. I mean, I am concerned a little bit. They have walked 11 guys, their primary four starters, in their 14 starts. That's up there for them. More than, almost closing in on one per game. That's probably way too much for them. No, they've been terrific. Now, you got Scott Randall at the front of the rotation. He's a guy that's going to give you a chance to win a series every weekend because he's going to be the guy starting the series. He can move his fastball in all four quadrants, is a bulldog on the mound. He's a dude. He's got 21 strikeouts, two walks through 24 innings. opponents hitting 198 against him. Now, there is a little bit of concern with Eli Saul. Throws the heck out of the ball, but he's not missing a ton of bats right now. 21 hits in 13 innings, so they got to get him figured out. You know, get him missing some bats, and then you got a legit rotation that is a rotation that no one wants to see in a regional. That is not the team you want to see. You do not want to see that green hornet on the other side, you know, facing you, because you know that you're going to face some legit pitching each game of the series. They got some arms in the back end, too, as well with Stone Cherby, but they got to get their offense going a little bit. There's a couple guys, Keith Torres, their veteran shortstop, Dawson Bacho. You know, he had a big home run to win that opening day game at Arizona State, but he hasn't done too much after that. Driving in some runs, give him credit for that, but he's got to get a couple more hits to give him some more runners on base. Really big for them, getting Matt Smith back. He's only played in 7 games, but already off to a great start, hitting .478, 3 homers in his 7 games. So I think they're going to be a team that they'll be tough to beat in the WAC. They may be the team to beat in the WAC. I think there's a couple other teams that are in the mix there, but Sacramento State with that pitching staff, tough to beat, and a team you definitely don't want to see in a regional. Next question comes from Max G. How do you gauge the talent on Hawaii with 7 of their 8 wins coming against Pacific and Hilo, 2 D2 schools? How will that affect Manoa's RPI, and how will it affect the other Big West teams that play them, especially when Long Beach opens their season there next week? Again, I think this is a situation where the RPI is just going to be tough, you know, for the West in general. You know, you can't blame Hawaii because you're not going to travel as much this season, so they're playing the teams that are nearby. You know, I think every season they normally play one of these two schools. I think they split them up and play a different one each season rather than playing both of them. But you got to play what you can, and you know, there's just travel limitations this year. You know, you see in some of the conferences, like the WAC is no midweek games for them primarily. They're playing 4-game weekend series. The Big West is playing no non-conference games in the middle of the week either. So you're seeing some differences in the scheduling. So you can't really blame Hawaii for doing this. But I think the talent in Hawaii is legit. I mean, first off, let's start with Aaron Davenport. He's a legit Friday guy for them, but also has ridiculously legit flow coming out the back. You got to give him a ton of credit for that. That's 80 hair flying behind there. And he's a dynamic pitcher as well. They've got a couple other arms. I like Scotty Scott at the top of the lineup. He's a lefty. He's feisty. He creates a lot of havoc on the base pass. Can do a little bit of everything with the bat at the top of the lineup, whatever situation you kind of need him in. So, and they got a little bit of thump in the middle with a couple other guys. So Hawaii is a team that I think could make some noise in the Big West. I know Eric Sorensen, before the season, he was really high on them. I'm going to wait until I see them once again and then make a judgment. But, you know, there's some talent definitely on that roster. Ray McIntyre asks, Air Force or Washington State, who has a better chance to make some waves in conference play? This is a tough one. You know, we just saw Air Force go to Arizona and win a couple games down there, playing against Wichita State and Arizona, a little round-robin tournament they had going on there. They beat Arizona in one of those games. They've played some really stiff competition. I think they have a win over LSU as well. Washington State, on the other hand, hasn't played as tough competition, but off to a great start, got some confidence. They've got some legit bats in the middle of that lineup. Kyle Manzardo is a freak there. He can hit the ball anywhere in the yard. So he's a guy that I'm really curious to see in person. I think that Washington State can make a little bit more waves just because the Pac-12 is a little bit up and down right now. We haven't seen the dominant form from some of the teams at the top. We expected from Arizona, from UCLA. You're seeing Oregon take a couple strides forward. Oregon State has taken a couple strides forward early in the season. I think Washington State can get in that mix. I think that they have 2 legit arms at the front of the rotation that gives them a chance. Now, they don't have the depth of arms, so that'll be the question. And the Pac-12 is definitely more difficult than the Mountain West, but I'm going to go with Washington State here. I think Brian Green is building a nice thing there with Washington State, and I think this is the year where they make a little bit of noise, not too much. Maybe they can get into a back end and get in a regional. You know, maybe they'll be one of the later teams getting in, but then I think he's building that program in the right direction. I think they're going to be a team that's going to be tough to handle with for the Pac-12 in years to come. At Brian Eckhorn asks, is UNLV legit? Can they win the Mountain West? And look, I don't think anyone can beat San Diego State in the Mountain West. However, UNLV is showing that they have the pitching that can compete with San Diego State. You have to go through the Aztecs first. You know, they've proven to be the top team in the conference for year over year for the last half a decade or so. So you got to go through them. And UNLV just lost a series at San Diego State. Now, they'll get the return trip, and we'll see how they do at home. But I've been really impressed with their pitching. That's something you don't often say about UNLV. Usually they'll have one arm at the front of the rotation, don't have the depth, and maybe they're actually helped a little bit this year by the fact that teams aren't playing as many midweek games. Now, they did get a big midweek game, midweek win on Tuesday at Arizona State. Congratulations on that one for them. But I think the fact that you're shrinking your rotation, you're not using as many arms during the week, it should help them out on the weekends, and then they only have to use their quality arms rather than trying to dip into the bullpen a little bit too much. But their starters have been, you know, terrific for them so far. Josh Sherman has been great. Chase Maddox, you know, he's not going to blow anything by anyone, but he knows how to pitch. I don't know if you've heard that last name. It's Maddox. Yeah, that's Greg's son. And, you know, Greg's not with the program anymore. You know, he's not as the volunteer coach helping out with the pitching this year, but their pitching has been terrific. You know, give a lot of credit to what they're doing there, what Stan Stolte and the group has been doing so far. And then obviously they always hit, and they've got some guys up the front of the lineup that are knocking the ball around. They've got some veteran guys in there. Jack Thomas Wold is a guy that's been there for 7 years. And maybe it is with the COVID and the extra years of eligibility. I don't know. But no, he's been in the lineup for multiple years for them, has been a quality bat all the time, and he's doing really well for them. They got some pieces that can still, you know, take some steps forward. Adarian Williams is a guy I think that's going to hit for them. He hasn't done too much yet. Same things with Miles Denson and Trevor Rosenberg. Those are guys that I expect to do a little bit more and haven't got off to, you know, terrible starts, but aren't off to terrific starts. So I think there's even more in the tank on the offensive side. So I think UNLV is a team to keep an eye on for sure in the Mountain West. But again, got to go through the Aztecs to win that conference. Famanship asks, who is the best team in the West and why is it Cal Poly? Well, if it is Cal Poly, then I'll tell you why. It's Brooks Lee. The guy is a beast. The kid is fantastic. You can't get him out, basically. He's got 18 RBIs already in 12 games. You know, he just mashes the ball. Everything he hits is hit hard. It's something that we saw 3 years ago at Area Code Games, 2 years ago at Area Code Games. You know, and it was unfortunate we didn't get to see him last year at the beginning of the season, but getting him on campus was huge for Larry Lee. I don't know if, you know, their last name sounds similar because that's his father. Yeah, that definitely helps when your top prospect is your son to get him on campus. But Brooks has been fantastic for him in the middle of the lineup. You know, he's doing everything I just said, and he's only got 6 strikeouts through 12 games. You know, really impressed with him. I've seen him a couple times this season for a few innings. Just smokes everything that he hits. But they've got other pieces around him, and I think he's giving everyone else around him confidence. And I think also last year, the couple games they got in early in the season, they played against Vanderbilt, getting wins against Vanderbilt, playing against Michigan, those games early in the season in that tournament in Arizona, I think that gave some confidence to this group, and I think they're playing with that confidence. And if you get good enough pitching on the mound, and so far, their starting pitching has been terrific. You know, Drew Thorpe, 29 Ks through 23 innings. I think he is a guy to keep an eye on. I'm looking forward to the first opportunity I get to see him pitch. I will see Cal Poly this weekend. They're a team that I'll have my eye on, and I actually should have mentioned them earlier when I was talking about the Big West. I think they're a team that's in that mix as well, especially if they continue to get the starting pitching they've gotten so far. Now back to the original question, who's the best team in the West? I still am going to give it to the team that Cal Poly actually just beat. You know, they just beat, just took a series from UCLA. But I still think UCLA is going to come around, and we're going to see them, you know, play to their full potential soon. That's a team that I'm keeping my eye on, though. You know, a little concerned about some of the things that have happened for them. Their defense still has to play a little bit better, and they got to throw a little bit more strikes, which is usually not an issue for John Savage coach teams. So keeping an eye on them, but they're still at the top of my West Coast rankings right now. There's a reason why they were number 2 in our preseason poll, and especially when they get Zach Pettway going back full strength, I think they become a different team then. So hopefully we'll see that soon from the Bruins as well. Bennett Berg says, hi Shotgun. Pepperdine has dealt with injuries COVID so far this year and is 5-9 after high preseason expectations. Do you have any knowledge on Cooper Chandler and Billy Cook returns? And if this team can get healthy, are they still a strong contender to win the WCC? Well, positive news from Malibu is that Cooper Chandler threw an inning in a scrimmage today and could be available this weekend for an inning or two, and they'll start working him up and get him. I think that's a really big boost for the pitching staff, a big shot in the arm because of his competitiveness. Adding him back in the mix will only help that pitching staff. And they got to get Billy Cook going. He's day-to-day, and they hope to have him back, you know, this week or next week as well. So, you know, they're an interesting club. Just like I said, they started off slow. They've got a couple guys that need to get going. Cook's one of them, but also Aaron Modlin's another guy that they have high expectations for. They got to get going. You know, Ryan Johnson, Wyatt Young, Reese Alexiades, and Justin Luce, those guys are kind of carrying the load right now. They need some of those other guys to fill in that they were, you know, had high expectations for, that they expected to be big parts of that offense. And then the pitching staff is a little bit of concern. Trevor Hinkle's been pretty good for them, but besides that, their starting pitching hasn't been great. You know, getting Cooper Chandler back and pushing everybody else back maybe a spot in the rotation, that would change that a lot for them as well, I think. But they got to get some better pitching right now. They just aren't pitching well enough as a staff. So if they get Cooper Chandler back, they get Billy Cook back, they start moving toward in the right direction, maybe they're a team that comes on. But right now, I'm really concerned about where Pepperdine is at right now because of the injuries that they've sustained early in the season. And the final question comes from Landon Colasso, who said, thoughts on Stanford so far this year? Where do you see the card finishing up in the Pac-12? Stanford is still a little bit of an enigma for me. They've got off to a great start. They're 10-2. They've taken 3 of 4 from Santa Clara, 3 of 4 from UC Irvine, and swept a 4-game series with San Francisco. They'll start Pac-12 play this weekend with Utah. But I'm still a little concerned about the starting pitching. Brendan Beck has decent numbers. His ERA is kind of high right now, but he's only given up 11 hits through 17 innings. He's got 22 Ks. I think he's a dude at the front of the rotation that you really trust, you know, what he's done. He's a veteran for them. Quinn Matthews has been really good for them, but there's a lot of concerns behind that. The Sunday roll is still up in the air. They've tried a couple guys there. They've got a couple of pieces in the bullpen that are really, they really can trust and really know what to do with. But, you know, when you get in those Pac-12 series, if you start having a matchup, are you going to have enough guys that you know, have complete faith in if your starter doesn't go 7 innings for you? That's going to be a big question for me. And they're relying on a lot of unproven guys in the lineup that have gotten off to good starts. Brock Jones has really taken a step forward, it seems like, this year. And Christian Robinson, the same thing. Now, that's a second-year freshman versus a third-year junior, or fourth-year junior, I believe, there. So, you know, both of those guys are really taking a step forward and are hitting well in the middle of the lineup. Tim Todd is doing what he does for them. So I think they got some pieces there, and they've got some young pieces that are able to come along. But I'm still just a little intrigued. I want to see them in person before I make a final judgment on Stanford and whether I think that they're, you know, legit team to compete in the Pac-12. I'm still concerned a little bit with the depth there with some of the arms that they, you know, that they have behind Beck and behind Matthews and in front of Gresh and Weermiller in the back end of the bullpen as well. So I got some questions, you know, who's the bridge guys? Who's going to be that Sunday roll? I got to get some answers to those before I'm ready to put Stanford up there in the mix for the Pac-12 title. Well, guys, thanks for the questions and for joining in the Sidearm Delivery Podcast conversation as we talked about the West Coast. Thank you also to Gonzaga head coach Mark Maktoff for taking the time out of his busy schedule to talk with us again. We hope to have him back on soon after our technical issues cost us that interview. Hope we can still provide some West Coast insights for you guys, and we hope you'll return to join us next time as we get going back to full throttle. I'm your host, Shotgun Spratling, and this has been the D1 Baseball Sidearm Delivery Podcast. Ding, ding.